Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. I am your host, Richard, and I will be with you throughout this journey. This show is here to empower individuals to do more in life professionally. You will find a variety of topics that will help you to be more productive and more successful. So join me and the professionals from different industries as we bring education and knowledge for more success. Hi, everybody. My name is Richard L'Espérance, and I go by the name of My Man Richard. Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. Today, I have a special guest. His name is Kenneth Burks. Kenneth Burks. He's a tech entrepreneur and innovator. So today we're going to talk about car business. He has a successful business that he built. So we're going to talk about that and his journey. Please, Kenneth, give us a brief resume of who you are in 2 minutes and we'll get started.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity today. I appreciate you having me on and allowing me to tell a little bit about my background, our company, and introduce ourselves to your audience. As you mentioned, my name is Kenneth Burks, originally from Newark, New Jersey. For folks who may not know, that's right outside of New York City, born and raised there. My background is actually in mathematics, and it really speaks to my problem-solving ability. Since a young age, I was always, in my eyes, an innovator. I found the problem, I wanted to find a solution. And take that, math background to the automotive landscape. I started my career in automotive, again, with a math background, back in 2014, working at the Firestone Complete Auto Care Center. And essentially there, I work with end consumers, business owners, et cetera, helping them, maintain their vehicle. A customer would come in for four tires, a transmission job, et cetera. And as a, college graduate, my job was to really sell them service. However, it was more part of a larger program, a leadership development program, allowing me to learn the ground of the business, how customers are really affected by change. So from learning the ground level of the business in the automotive field, I moved up the corporate ladder in a few different sales roles, working with large corporations like, Costco, Walmart, et cetera, really learning the ins and outs of that business while combining that with my, ground level approach. Sum that all together, it's really, why I am here today. My problem solving ability and then my background automotive really brought me to a time in COVID in 2020 with me going back to school for my MBA. And with that, the sole reason was to, again, to continue to climb the corporate ladder, but more so to really, bring a business to life that I started back in 2017 with CarKenny. And CarKenny is the future of mobility. We have a few different products and services that really fall under that. But essentially, we are building a platform that helps us scale to the next level of mobility. And that breaks down to two different areas. On the one end is security. The other end is accessibility. But again, my background in mathematics and problem solving and business really speaks volumes to who I am as a person and the products and services I try to bring to the market.
Okay, so before you created the app, because I went to I visit the site and everything. Before you created the app, did you create a lot of prototypes before you got the right one?
Yeah, so it's definitely a lot of trial and error. And I would say the good thing about my journey to being an entrepreneur and a founder is I started internally. I started building these products when I was still in corporate America. And in some sense, it was, kind of a not a direct product that I have now, but a lot of these offerings were already, alive in my corporate role. So, for example, when I was at Bridgestone Tire, they were looking to upgrade their fleet management platform. And I, came to the table and recommended a few products around video telematics. So to answer your question, yes, it took a lot of trial and error, a lot of MVPs, a lot of, prototypes, et cetera. But I built this proof of concept in my corporate job back in 2017, 2018, 2019. So I use a lot of those iterations, a lot of those learnings from corporate America, seeing a lot of investments happen on the corporate side as well and retail side to really help our product get to market where we're at now. So yeah, to answer your question, yes, it wasn't an overnight success. Definitely a lot of trial and error, a lot of putting, you know, MVPs out in the market, asking for feedback, getting that feedback and iterating.
So if someone wants to, if they have an idea for a product that they want to create, where should they start, and how can they get that that product off the ground?
That's a great question. I would say the million-dollar question these days, especially there's a lot of energy in pre-seed companies, or essentially companies right at the ground level, essentially starting. There's a lot of money being put into this because of some financial hardships in the market. Investors don't want to put their money into kind of later stage companies that have already matured, like a Uber or a Stripe or somebody who's already, you know, basically IPO'd or near IPO. The return on investment is not as high there. An investor may get, you know, 2x the return. Whereas though nowadays, a lot of money is going to, you know, pre-seed or very early companies where, you know, investor can essentially, you know, 10x their money, 100x their money. So to kind of go back to answer your question, I would say it first starts with doing the research, you know, finding a problem that you're passionate about. It should be something that you know, deal with every day, or you seeing firsthand how that problem is affecting consumers. And once you kind of have that problem and that conviction, you know, a lot of things start to fall into place. You know, you can start to do, you know, customer journeys and customer research and getting customer reviews to find out exactly, you know, dive deeper into your problem, you know. Essentially, what's the problem behind the problem? What's the need behind the need there? And once you find that need, you know, curtail a solution to them. You know, sometimes it's just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. And then finally, seeing there are customers out there willing to pay for that product. You know, once you kind of do that groundwork, you know, building comes a lot easier. You know, if you are a technical co-founder or a technical founder, you have the ability to build yourself. You know, you can code, you know, great. And you know, once you have that problem, that solution, and in the market for it, you know, go ahead and start coding, you know, a small MVP or a product that, you know, essentially very easy to build, a very easy to work, but not have all, you know, all the bells and whistles to it. You're really just trying to launch it to the market to see, you know, people are willing to pay for it as they say they were. So that's kind of one side. If you are very technical, once you find that problem and solution, you know, kind of go after it once that conviction is there. On the flip side, and this is probably where a lot of folks fall, is they have a product or they have a idea, they have a problem and solution, but they can't build it themselves. They're not a technical founder. They didn't work for Google or Apple or come from Stanford and Harvard and have a great connection. So it's a little harder for them to build. So what I recommend doing is kind of the route I took is, you know, reach out to people smarter than you, as I like to say. You know, I like to, you know, spend a lot of time on like Twitter, LinkedIn, a lot of social media sites, really, you know, find those technical folks, those people in your domain that can really help you either with, you know, product iterations, with advice, or sometimes, you know, they can be a technical co-founder to help you code. So I would say really surround yourself with smarter people. And it's really where you find those, you know, in this age of, you know, COVID and virtual world, spend a lot of time on those social media platforms, finding those virtual networks. But, you know, as people are getting back outside, you know, going to startup meetups, going to seminars, going to conferences in your domain space, because you never know who you can meet can help you get your product from, you know, something on a napkin to actually having a product on an app store. So I would just say really taking advantage of, you know, your domain expertise and then really reaching out to people close to you that could help you get that product from, you know, stage zero to actually stage, you know, 3 or 4 where it needs to be.
Okay. And how's the patent process? How does someone get a patent if they want to get serious with the idea and the product?
Yes, I would say kind of back to the previous question. If you are a patent attorney, you have some patent law, you know, it's easy to, you know, find a problem and a solution and get a patent. But again, you know, for the large majority of people out there, they're not a patent judge, not a patent attorney, don't have that domain expertise. So kind of the same rules apply. You know, find a problem that you're passionate about, find a solution, find some conviction, and then reach out to people smarter than you. What helped for me is, you know, I'm no patent attorney. I have no patent background, but I always knew that this idea was patentable because I reached out to some attorneys to have them do a kind of an analysis to see, hey, you know, if I was to move forward with a patent, do you think this would be approved? And once I got that confirmation that, hey, this is patentable, and I did that analysis back in 2017, I mean, I set it on for a while because I didn't have the finance to really go after it. But essentially, once I came around that, hey, this idea needs to move forward, I reached out to my professor at business school. I let him know, hey, I'm building this product. I know you're very, you're a very good networker, a very good, you have a great Rolodex there. So could you reach out to people in your network to see if there's any patent attorneys there? And, you know, 24 to 48 hours, he turned around with a few attorneys that could help. So that was kind of my route I took. I reached out to some people close to me, but I would just recommend that there. It's like, again, once you find the conviction and you know that you can't do the things yourself, reach out to people out there that could help you. I mean, you can start on social media. There's places like Upwork and things of that nature that, you know, you can find, you know, smarter people, attorneys, coders, programmers, et cetera, to help you build. So that's really my advice there is really ask for help. You know, the something I live by is closed mouths don't get fed. So if you're not telling people what you're building, asking for help, nobody is going to help you.
And how much does it cost, like, on an average to patent your idea?
Yeah, I would say that really varies based on the attorney you go to, the state you're in, how complicated the patent is, as well as, you know, in this game of inflation, I got my idea patent. At least we started the patent process. It was in a few stages of a provisional patent, something just to put it in the market so we can get our name in line. And then we did a non-provisional patent, which you can't, you know, you can't actually change, followed up once we were, you know, once we had all the details there. But yeah, I would say that price varies. But I would say you're probably looking at north of, you know, $5,000, $5,000 to $7,000, depending on, again, the attorney you go to, how good they are, how in-depth your patent is. But it's definitely not something cheap that it's not going to be cheap to get to market. So you really need to do the due diligence to see, you know, is my idea of, you know, worth patenting? Is that the first step I should take? Or should I, you know, do some ground research first? Should I build first? Should I do, you know, marketing first? So it's some strategy you'll have to, you know, use internally. But if patent is the way you want to go because you have something that you think, you know, should be protected, I definitely recommend, you know, finding people out there that could help you.
And how long is the whole process?
Yeah, another complicated question. I would say in the name of COVID, a lot of things slowed down. I was talking to people, you know, before COVID who say that, you know, sometimes it's a few years. You can actually pay to get it expedited if you know the process. But I would say it's definitely, especially now during COVID, it's a few years. You know, we filed our patent back, I want to say August of 2021. And it's now in February of 2023, and it still hasn't been approved. I mean, it's patent pending, and that is a lot of protection there, just having that patent pending stamp and being in line. But yeah, it's a long process, and we're going on 2 years right now.
Okay. So how does it work if your patent is still pending and you're doing the business, like the product is still out? So how does that work?
Yeah, so it's kind of a stamp of approval in a sense that, hey, we are in line for this. We are building this. And if this gets approved, right, this is our official stamp of approval. But the analogy I would give is, you know, it's something that investors look for in lieu of the official patent. It shows that you guys are in line. You guys are doing the due diligence. You guys are doing the legwork to get this because, you know, some things you can't control. Like I said, with the timetable right now, due to the pandemic, there's been a lot of influx of applications with patents, trademarks, copyrights, things of that nature. So a lot of these guys are just bombarded with applications. So some of those things you can't control, but patent pending does protect you that, hey, we are in line. The USPTO knows that we're in line. They have an application. So, hey, buddy, if you're looking to steal this idea, be wary that if this gets approved, you know, we're probably gonna be coming after you to sue. Now, if it doesn't get approved, the person who's copying you, you know, kudos to them. But that's kind of the idea of patent pending is it's the best layer of protection you can have until that patent comes online because you're letting people know that, hey, this is what we're building. We are in line. So watch out. But on the flip side, when that patent is pending and it is in line, everybody can see it. You know, the example I'll give is we have a patent pending now, and anybody who submits a patent that's in reference to our patent, the USPTO puts it on your site. And I saw a few weeks ago that Microsoft filed a similar patent to ours that really speaks to, because what our patent is essentially It's like a black box for your vehicle. We tap into the vehicle's computer or black box and extract real-time information from that, like GPS location, camera feed, sensor data, etc. We timestamp it and save it to the cloud for you to use at a future use. Maybe you're in an accident. Maybe you got pulled over. Maybe your vehicle was stolen. You have the access you need for that vehicle in real time or playback. And Microsoft actually put out a similar patent. Theirs is titled Post Vehicle Accident Report, something to that nature, where they're essentially, you know, trying to put together the same pieces of the puzzle to use for their need. So that's one of the kind of the downsides to patent. It's not saying that Microsoft copied us. I'm sure there's a lot of smart people at Microsoft thinking the same thing. But when you are online, people can see that. But again, on the flip side, you are protected if it gets approved. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword that you have to kind of, you know, analyze with your team before you put your name out there.
Mm-hmm. So how was the funding process for everything?
How you got it? You're going all the great questions, man. I would say the funding process has been challenging. I actually just got off a call with some fellow founders who are looking to apply to Y Combinator, which is, you know, the biggest accelerator program out there. You know, think of all the top startup companies for the most part have went through Y Combinator. Airbnb, Uber, Stripe, Twitter, Snapchat, you name it. But with that said, you know, you really have to put your company, you have to position your company in a way that it's hard for investors to say no. And sometimes things are stacked against you. As I talked about earlier, if you're not a technical co-founder, if you're not, you know, ex-Google, ex-Facebook, ex-Stanford, it's a little harder to raise money. You know, some of those guys, you know, if a guy from, you know, one of the head product guys from Google or a guy who's already founded a company or a gal, I won't, you know, limit it to men only, but a person, even though, you know, men lead the funding rounds, out the, you know, minorities and women are, you know, a very small subset of the, you know, the funding that is, you know, given by VC. I want to say less than like 3 or 4%. But in a nutshell, if you are, you know, a technical, if you have a great pedigree, great resume, or if you are like a 2-time, 3-time founder, I mean, people are throwing money at you. It's like hard to, you know, not get money. But if you are a person of color, if you have a non-traditional background, if you are, you know, outside the space, outsider, I should say, it's going to be very hard to raise capital. You really got to be, you know, 10 times better than your competition. You got to have, you know, unbelievable traction of people, you know, using your platform, of people on your wait list. You just got to be, you know, you just got to be the best of the best. And it's something that I'm sure you and I have faced, you know, our whole life. We had to be 10 times better than, you know, our competition to get the same thing done. So with that in mind, that, you know, not to kind of harp or, you know, kind of be pessimistic on the funding journey, but I think it's, you know, it's important to be realistic with founders as they get into the space that it's not going to be easy. You know, you're going to have to bootstrap. You're going to have to, you know, put some skin in the game. You're going to have to use your personal finances, use your personal credit, reach out to family and friends, use everything at your disposal to make your company happen. Because if you don't believe in your company, nobody's going to believe in it. So with that said, I bootstrapped up until this point. I've really taken no outside capital. I've used my own funding to, you know, get the patent filed, get trademarks filed, to market, to build, to land partnerships. It's all out of my own capital. And something that I'm very proud of, because, you know, when you invest your own money, you're willing to go a lot further versus if, you know, if something was given to me, I may not have the same level of attachment to it or the same love for it. So to kind of answer your question, bootstrap. It's been a journey. However, we're at a point now where I like to say I'm a sports guy. I like to say when momentum is on your side, it's on your side. When it's against you, it's not much you can do for it against you. And I feel as that we're around that point where momentum is coming on our side, where we, you know, we have released our product to the market. We are getting great feedback. We are building out the accessibility part of our platform, which is really one platform for mobility, kind of like they have in Canada, where you can use one app for mass transit, bike share, scooters, rental cars, etc. We're integrating that platform into our existing mobility offerings. So I feel like momentum is on our side. And we have just, like, for example, been accepted into a Capital One accelerator program for automotive startups. And things like that really helps you get your name out there, brand awareness, and then investors start to come on board. Again, kind of to my earlier point, making it hard for an investor to say no. So it's just to sum that all up to say is, you know, raising money is very hard, but anything worth having in life is very hard. So, you know, be prepared for it.
Would you say, because I was going to ask about some challenges that you face, would you say this was your biggest challenge, or you had other challenges along the way?
I would say in terms of the startup world, it's probably one of the biggest challenges is, you know, being having to prioritize things in life. You know, I've invested over $50,000 of my own money into this business. You know, so that's a lot of birthdays I missed out on, you know, vacations, clothes, opportunities, things of that nature. So that was one of the challenges there. But I would say big picture, you know, nothing compares to the challenge of life, you know, of, you know, making it from Newark, New Jersey, being one of the first people in my family to graduate, you know, with a bachelor's degree, and now going back for a master's and get my master's degree, you know, leaving home at 15, being a one of 10 children to a single mom, like things like that. That's the real challenge. I mean, this is fun. I guess it's hard. Yes, I got to prioritize. Yes, I got to spend, you know, 4 weekends straight building instead of going out with family and friends, like things like that. Yes, it's not, you know, as sexy as, you know, some other career choices or other things right now because I'm building, but nothing compares to the challenge of life that I've had. So I've kind of keep things in perspective for me. But yes, it's been hard. Yes, you know, raising capital is hard, and it's easy for you to give up. So really having something that you're really passionate about and you have that conviction allows you to maybe go to sleep, you know, angry one night, but wake up, you know, with a fresh start the next day, willing to, you know, run through a wall.
So what are some lessons that you learned along the way?
I would say the biggest lesson, and we've kind of touched on this earlier with, you know, how many iterations that I put out. I would say one of the biggest lessons in the startup world, and, you know, it really takes you to kind of re-engineer your thought process. In this startup world, failure is actually your friend. Like you want to fail, but the key is you want to fail fast. You want to fail early. You want to fail in the early stages, because when you're kind of building, people appreciate your failure. They appreciate you being vulnerable. They appreciate building with you, like seeing a product go from, you know, stage zero to stage five. Like if you can imagine, if you were one of the first Uber customers or one of the first YouTube customers, one of the first Amazon customers, and kind of like seeing how that page looked, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, into like, where is that now? And all the offerings, you're like, wow, you know, this is great. I was one of the early adopters. So that's one of the lessons there is, like, you got to embrace failure. You got to embrace, you know, put your name out there and being told, hey, your company sucks, but I see the vision. Come back to me when you've kind of figured that out. Like things like that, it's hard to hear that something that you're passionate about, that you invested a lot of time, finances, and money into, sucks. But it's like that idea of failure really, again, helps you, like, because you get unbelievable lessons in that failure that you would never get in the success. Like if you have early success, maybe when failure comes down the line, you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. But if you have that failure early, it kind of grounds you. Allows you to kind of, you know, weed out some of the things that don't work and focus on the things that work. So there's probably a number of things I could say in terms of lessons, but that's probably the biggest lesson that I've taken away from the startup journey. And then applying that to other aspects of life as well has been really great. But just the idea of failure is not bad in this space. It's actually great.
Okay. So my other question may be a little bit similar, but maybe you could give another perspective. So what advice would you have for someone who wants to create a product from scratch?
Yeah, I would say going back to my original point of, you know, do the groundwork. I would say it's probably best to build something in a space that you have domain experience in, because you'll have some secret sauce that nobody else has, because you've lived that. You've seen a problem firsthand. So I would say that's usually the first stage, is do the groundwork. You know, I like to sleep on things before I, you know, move forward with, especially if it's like something big in my life. And I like to like call my mom and tell my mom about it, sleep on it, talk to friends, you know, maybe put it on social media, kind of get some feedback, see what people are thinking. So I would say just kind of like doing the groundwork needed to kind of put a business plan together, put a pitch deck together. And that could be, you know, again, going on social media and doing a poll. You know, who in here has issues with, you know, saving finances, and you kind of get some feedback there. So it's kind of like doing that groundwork there to ensure that you, you know, understand a problem correctly, understand how a solution could be beneficial to them. And then again, you know, reaching out for help. It could be all be, you know, founding fellow founders building in your space who can help you, because a lot of great advice you'll get is from people who have went through the journey that you're trying to go through versus, you know, people who are trying to invest in you or people, you know, outside your space. Typically the best advice comes from people who have, you know, kind of walked that same journey. So I would say reaching out to help. And now, and just kind of give a different point than I gave early, is I would say look for programs out there to support you. Right now, there's a lot of free programs who offers, you know, advice. Like, think of like an accelerator or incubator program where their goal is to help you go from, you know, an idea on napkin to actually something, you know, on the app store, or even like, you know, a functional website. And sometimes these things cost. So I'm not saying that it's going to be always free. You got to be willing to invest in yourself and your journey if you believe in it. But I would say those are probably like three good areas that you can focus on if you want to get, you know, a business from the ground. It's making sure you understand a problem correctly, do a lot of the research, customer feedback and journeys, reach out for help, you know, albeit social media, Upwork, Fiverr, you know, local places. And then again, you know, probably look for some resources out there, like incubators, accelerators, programs that their mission is to help startup companies.
Okay. I was going through your website. There's some service that you offer. I think it's vehicle management and stuff like that. Can you explain a little bit what are those all about?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say it's probably best to speak to like where the company started from just really quickly. So I was working at Bridgestone Tire, was traveling to Vegas one weekend, going through a speed trap, and I was pulled over. It was a weekend. I was just traveling for leisure. I was pulled over speeding, and I had no way to prove my speed. So I thought, like, hey, I need to build a device that allows you to, you know, prove your speed at any given time, prove your location at any given time to say that, hey, I was actually here and not there. No, just kind of unique examples. And then I thought, you know, yes, there's a market out there for customers like that who face that same challenge, but also for all the, you know, parents out there who are looking to monitor their teen driving, to secure their teen driving, or all the vehicles owners out there who are looking to monetize their vehicles and need a platform to secure those vehicles while they're being monetized. And then again, it correlates to my work at Bridgestone Tire, where I help kind of, you know, build some of these products internally. So in a nutshell, our platform today, I like to say it's a Ring doorbell for your vehicle. You know, the same technology that Ring doorbell brings for security for your home, we bring that same technology for your vehicle. So you can imagine, like, you know, have access to GPS location at your fingertips, vehicle health data. How my vehicle is doing health wise? You know, is the tire pressure right? Is the battery pressure? You know, is the battery right? Remote access, etc. So that's kind of, you know, some of the features we bring together in a platform for mobility. And what's unique about us is we're brand agnostic. We connect to over 33 different brands, totaling about 153 different vehicles. So if you are like a parent, you have a Tesla at home, a Ford, and a Toyota, because your wife drives a Toyota, you drive a Tesla, your kid drives a Ford. That's essentially like three apps you need to monitor those vehicles. Well, we bring it all together under one platform. So that's in a nutshell like how we provide vehicle management and car safety now for consumers.
Okay. Where can people find you on social media or the internet?
Absolutely. I would say you can find us at our website, www.carkenny.com. And it allows you to, you know, to download our mobile app as well as, you know, play around with our web app. In terms of on social media, the business pages are all Carkenny Inc. CarkennyInc. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, etc. In terms of my personal page, just really quickly, for folks who are, because I'm very vocal on the personal page, I love to help fellow founders. You can find me at Burks, B-U-R-K-S, K-K-0-1. That's my Instagram and Twitter. And then finally, I'm on LinkedIn as well. So that's probably a great place in terms of professional wise to reach out to me. Kenneth Burks. That's Kenneth with an I, K-E-N-N-I-T-H, B-U-R-K-S.
Okay. Any last word in regards to everything we talked about?
Yeah. I just want to speak really quickly to, kind of platform versus product, especially as, you know, maybe some of your guests here looks to build out their own products. I saw some interesting one I learned about it in business school, but it was kind of reiterated to me recently from an investor. And he was saying that at this investment stage of the journey, he's investing very early, again, for the reasons I mentioned before, that it's a lot bigger return to invest early versus investing late. But it's also risky because, you know, an early company, your money can go to zero, but it also can go to, you know, 20 times, 100 times the money. But with that said, he was mentioning that he doesn't invest in just products alone. If you just build one product, you know, it may be a fad. You know, it may do great, but it may tail off. But he invests in platforms because a platform is something you can build on top of. An example of a platform is like the iPhone. It's something that you can build on top of with apps, like, you know, apps like Uber wouldn't exist today if it wasn't for iPhone. And same can be said about artificial intelligence these days, like OpenAI or ChatGPT. It's kind of a platform that a lot of companies are building on top of, or even they are building on top of themselves. So that's kind of the idea of what we're building at CarKenny. We're building a mobility platform that one of the products is, you know, car security. We have a lot of, you know, patent pending car security features, as I mentioned today. We also have accessibility, as I mentioned, you know, one platform for consumers to get around. So again, if I'm traveling to Montreal, I'm sure that I'm going to need a few modes of transportation to get around. I may fly there, and then I may want to go downtown to the city. So I may take a Uber or Lyft, or hey, I may want to take a bus or a train because I want to, you know, do my part to, you know, help out with emissions. One platform allows you to get, you know, all those modes of transportation done, you know, plan it, book it, and pay for it. So that's another product that we are offering. But there's other products that comes off of that. So again, that's kind of the idea of when you're building a company, you're trying to build some, think bigger than, you know, what your mind is limiting you to. Sorry, I had a little tongue twister there. You know, if it is a, let's say you are building, you know, a barbershop, you know, you want to build a barbershop. How can that barbershop turn into a platform? How can you add technology to that barbershop? And maybe it's a plethora of barbershops. Maybe it's a plethora of beauty products that you're offering, and barbershop just seems to be one leg of that. So that's probably some lasting advice that I want to stick home is, as you're looking to build these companies, you know, kind of think bigger, think platform, think, you know, how I can, you know, have people monetize, you know, my offerings, why I'm still making money off what I'm bringing value to the table every day. So that's just one of the points that I've been, you know, kind of been simmering in my brain. So I would like to, you know, kind of pass the message along.
Thank you for listening. If there's any topics you would like me to touch, feel free to reach out to me and I'll do my best to make it happen. I'm on most social media platforms and you could send me an email. You will find the links in the show notes. And also, don't forget, if this is your first time listening to the podcast and you like it, please don't forget to subscribe at the end. Thank you and see you next time.